Let's try that again. The sounder that says heroic horns is right next to the Masterpiece Theater sound sounder on this thing. So they could go either way, really. But it is now time for History Matters with the one and only Scott Washington, historian extraordinaire, joining us to talk about this week in history. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Aaron. I just thought maybe you were just playing the theme backwards.
You know, thing. Yeah, no, you'd hear all kinds of satanic messages if I played it backwards. That Masterpiece Theater theme song is just full of obscenities if you play it in reverse.
That's almost, or it was a multiple choice. If you can guess what is the theme song for History Matters, you know, call us now.
There you go.
But anyways, it's been a good week. How about you?
So far, so good.
Fall has come in with a bang.
Big time. Did we have any days in the 70s? I was in Florida last week, and it was very hot and humid. We get in the car in Orlando, and it was still close to, it was in the 80s at 7 in the morning when we got in the car, and heating up even more. We get out of the car on Sunday afternoon in Durham, and it's like, it was 65 degrees. Like, we have to put on jackets now.
It was the craziest thing to have this hurricane turn tropical storm, and then immediately after it blows through, temperature drops 30 degrees.
Yeah.
That was really, it was almost like, okay, fall is coming in with a bang, and
ever since then,
it's been really glorious. I'm not really arguing with it. Yeah. Well, this is a great week in history. There are some really accidental things that happened this week that are just delightful. And I think the first one to start off with is October 15th, 1860, is when an 11-year-old girl writes President Lincoln. And her name was Grace Greenwood Bedell Billings. And she writes the president, the future U.S. president, suggesting he should grow a beard. And so prior to assuming office, that's what he does. And, of course, we always think, oh, well, I actually looked this up because I thought this just sounds like something that's just urban.
No, that happened. Yeah, I know.
It really did.
Yeah, yeah.
But she did not only influence him, but as I was looking at the portraits of the U.S. presidents, that up until Lincoln, they're all clean shaven.
Right.
Lincoln has a beard, and there's about 10 presidents up through Howard Taft, William Howard Taft, who all either have mustaches or beards.
Right.
He's the last one until then. So it's
Andrew Johnson got away with not having a mustache or a beard.
Yes.
He was the one clean shaven guy. And then, it's Grant. they all have.
They have mustaches or beards. It's really interesting that.
Yeah.
Of course, these are men, so that's you know, a possibility.
I mean, it's a good thing. It's a good thing, Grace. What was her? This is back in the age when everyone had six middle names. It's a good thing
Grace
this girl was
Greenwood Bedell Billings.
Grace Billings. There we go. It's a good thing she didn't suggest anything really.
That's right, mohawk. That would really look good on you.
You should shave both sides of your head and dye the middle pink.
It might have changed the way the penny looked or the $5 bill.
We'd have to cast the penny in something other than copper just to really get that color in there.
So, anyways, that's kind of an unusual one. But that same day, October 15th. Now, this has nothing to do with it, but there is something fascinating about this. 1933 is when the 20th Amendment takes effect.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's the one. That specified the president's and vice president's terms were to begin on January 20th.
Mm.
Now, what's interesting is way before this, going back to 1789, when the first Congress meets on March 4th, that's when the presidential terms would begin.
Mm.
But it was huge problems during Abraham Lincoln's term and also Franklin Roosevelt's because, and you probably know this, you had the Civil War, and there's 4 months between Lincoln's election in November before he actually is able to assume office. Meanwhile, you know, you have
states are seceding left and right.
And the same thing happens with Roosevelt, who's elected in 1932 in November, and he has to wait until March, and here's the Great Depression, and the problem is getting worse.
Yep.
So this was one way to rectify that. And that's why we always wonder, well, how did we get to January 20th? It's because of this amendment, the 20th Amendment.
Yep. It's a fascinating thing that you think about elections in November, and then the president doesn't take office until January, and you've got that weird month and a half or 2 months
think
now
it's a long
plus.
Time.
We think it's a long time, but it was 5 months or close to it between election day and the president taking office, and that was just an eternity in some cases.
And also because of that election time where you have the popular vote, then the Electoral College has to be.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to factor that in anyways in December.
But, right. But still,
it's really interesting to think, this little fluky thing.
And there were those times in history when we were kind of in between presidents and things were happening very rapidly and there wasn't anyone kind of in that position officially.
Right.
Yeah.
That it just kind of is languishing there for 4 months. That's a long time.
Yep.
When you want to see change. All right. Well, so that's one of the kind of interesting things. Okay, I'm not sure there's a connection exactly between Lincoln's beard and
it's a presidential thing,
it's
right?
It's a presidential thing.
Well,
Thank you.
Here's the connection. It was good that the 20th Amendment didn't pass until 1933 because had it been in effect earlier, Lincoln would not have had as much time to grow that beard, as he otherwise did from November to March.
That's right.
He had plenty of time to make it full and lush and flowing. Yeah.
It's one of those interesting things. If you listen, a great trivia question of how that happened. There are two dates that are linked this week, and when we look at these, a week in history, sometimes this stuff comes up, and you kind of go, well, now that's really interesting. October 21st, 1879, is when Thomas Edison succeeds in making his electric light. Now, according to some, and you'll hear 3,000, 5,000, but the more accurate one is probably around 1,200 different experiments to get the filament inside so it would last long enough. And lasting long enough was like 12 hours.
Right.
But they tried everything. And not that other people didn't. It was the value of persistence in doing that. And the tie-in for the other thing that happens this week is something that starts really as a practical
This is
joke.
Your favorite historical
I love
thing.
This one.
I know we've talked about this one a couple of times before. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
All right.
This fellow named Marvin Pipkin joins General Electric's National Electric Lamp Company.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a joke, they have this thing they would try out with the new employees, say if we can make the inside coating of this light bulb kind of frosted, that would be great. And nobody's been able to do it. They think it's an impossible task, except he doesn't know it. So he goes, and the way you'd normally do it is they had thought about this, but the glass is very fragile, very brittle, and they would etch it on the inside, and then they would apply some coating, and then you would wash it with a weak kind of a acid to dissolve it. And to wash it out and try it again. Well, now this is where the accidents of history come in. So there's Marvin Pipkin, not knowing that it can't be done, but he's going and he's trying the normal method. And then the phone rings and he bumps over one of these glass bulbs. And so the acid that was supposed to take out the etching, it doesn't quite do all of its job and spills out. So he goes to answer the phone, answers it, comes back, and he bumps over the same light bulb, and it falls to the ground, but it doesn't break. And he's like, well, that's weird, because normal bulbs would break, because they're just so fragile. And so as he's looking at this, he realizes that maybe the acid didn't dissolve all of the etching, and that was the actual key. And so he shows it to his supervisors. He takes regular bulbs up to that point, which are extremely fragile. You occasionally see them up for auction. They're very fragile, and it rolls off the desk and breaks. He takes his, they roll off, they don't break. And
all
they're
right.
like dumbfounded.
Huh.
And so he actually has a hand also in the flash on cameras, the early flash.
I don't know if I want this guy to have a hand in anything. He just keeps bumping into things and knocking them over.
But you just gotta love this. These are these accidents of history. You know, the Hubble telescope goes up, not this week, but it goes up and it gets into space, and then everybody realizes it's not quite in focus.
Yes.
And so they have to send up a repair kit, basically, to this billion-dollar episode. And tracing it back, and the common story is that it came down to one tiny measurement that was off.
Right.
Because the English team was using metric, American was not, and that made a difference. But,
of course.
You know, those are the accidents of history that lead to great, great stories. Now, here's one that was another accident of history. I think that's the theme this week.
All right.
1814, in London, a beer vat ruptures and 388,000 gallons of beer spill into the streets of London, destroying homes. And because this was in a poor section of London, people mm-hmm. also live downstairs, and it floods downstairs. People actually die from drowning in beer, which is a terrible thing. The building actually stays up to 1922, and then it's demolished and becomes
the building
else.
Where the rupture happened, yes. or the building. Okay,
yeah, the actual the beer company brewery. They not a lot of people wanted to drink the beer after that.
I can imagine. Yeah.
But
okay.
it somehow manages to come back.
This is yesterday in history. This is the same. This is the same day that Al Capone finally gets brought in and sent to jail on tax evasion.
Oh my God! Yeah. Now here's a guy who thinks he's untouchable.
Mm-hmm.
No, and nobody. And we've all seen the movie, but the real story is quite fascinating because nobody can get the goods on him.
Right.
Nobody will testify him against him. And finally, it's one of this squad, this task force that's been sent to see if they can find him. Bring him down. Actually, it's his tax returns that are the undoing.
There you go.
Follow the
money. So how long was he... His prohibition doesn't last for terribly long, and this is 1931 when he's convicted, so this is before prohibition even ends.
That's
how long
right.
was he in organized crime in the first place? It couldn't have been that long.
Well, it was certainly... that part I don't know. That's a good question.
I'm looking that up. Does his era of reign of organized crime predate prohibition is the question.
I
honestly don't know. It couldn't have been... Okay, so if Wikipedia is to be believed, it's always the first thing that pops
updated.
Up when
okay,
you when
right.
you when you look something up on Google. His 7-year reign as crime boss ended when he was 33. Prohibition started. This guy was like 20 years old.
Wow.
Al Capone. He was maybe in his mid 20s when he started in organized crime, and when he finally got brought in, he was barely 30.
Wow.
Isn't that incredible?
That's incredible. That's something you don't quite get from the Robert De Niro
impression
of the movie. But, but by that point, of course, there had been a solidification of all of this undercover and illegal work by Al Capone. So he was able to certainly keep it going for a long time mm-hmm. afterwards, and not just in alcohol, obviously.
Yeah.
Which is what the movie gives you the impression of.
Right.
Which is not entirely accurate. So, see what we're all learning right now. This is how it works, which is so cool. All right. Now, there's another one this week, and you know I really love these ones about the animals.
Yes.
The pigeon and the cat. These are two great stories. About how we can have a tip of the hat.
These are both today in history,
today in history.
All right, we'll start with the cat, because the pigeon story is another fun one.
Yes, this is a cat named Felicette, who was sent into space by the French. Now, you know, Americans had sent the chimps, and there had been different animals, but dogs had gone into space. The Russians had sent a dog into space. But the French decided to do something different, and they sent in this, and the reason this cat was chosen, it was a stray, but apparently it was the most relaxed going through all the tests. I mean, these animals went through grueling tests in order to be sent into space, believe it or not.
Yeah.
So they went into gyroscopes and so on, and this cat apparently passed all the tests. And so
I'm sure she loved going through the gyroscope. There's got to be one chill cat to go through a gyroscope. And
We're going to send you into space.
Like, I would like some tuna, please.
But, you know, that's one of those interesting things. And finally, it wasn't until... We've laughed about this before, but it wasn't until like last year that someone started like a GoFundMe campaign to erect a statue to this cat.
Yes.
Because they had not actually done that. Other animals had gotten some commendations, but not Felicette, the cat.
The first cat in space. Yes. All right. It's got Scott Washington here in the studio. We've got time for one more, so we'll make it the pigeon.
All right, the pigeon. This is a great story. This happens in 1943 in Calvi Vecchia, Italy. And so a British company gets there first, and they're going to bomb it. But their radio is busted. They can't get a word out. And luckily, however, they have a carrier pigeon. And so at last they said, well, what have we got to lose? Otherwise, you know, we die. The village gets bombed. So the carrier pigeon flies out. And according to the accounts, it flies 20 miles in 20 minutes. I don't know what they said. That's really fast. They must have had a good tailwind. Yeah. I don't know. But it actually gets there just
That's the answer to your Monty Python question, though, right?
That's exactly.
60 miles an hour right there.
It's kind of an amazing thing to think about, that stops the bombing of this, saves 1,000 lives. Mm-hmm. And then in 1946, the pigeon is actually awarded the equivalent of the Queen Victoria Cross because of its valor in battle, and retires to Cincinnati. It's the first, also, non-English animal to actually receive this coveted award.
What is the bird equivalent of the Queen Victoria Cross? Don't they just give it the Queen Victoria Cross? I mean, at that point, species doesn't matter. Just give it the actual award.
Exactly. I think that would be kind of ridiculous to say the people who had actually gotten the Victoria Cross, and then a little animal standing beside them.
Ridiculous things have happened before.
Yes. Well, these are the accidents of history that make it so interesting, and why history matters, even in these very serious issues. Saving lives is important, but it's also, there are some moments that are funny, too.
There you go. History matters. Scott Washington, thank you so much.
Thank you.